Success isn't given, it's earned. And earning it means becoming the person who deserves it. The bottom line is where we cut through the chaos to simplify success, uncovering the strategies, mindset, and resilience it takes to win. Real stories, expert insights, and practical tools. Because the only way to the top is by putting in the work. This is The Bottom Line.
Welcome to The Bottom Line. I'm your host, Ryan Herpin, and today we're zeroing in on a pretty particular pain point every growing company faces: finding top-tier talent on a shoestring budget. Joining me is Erica Butler, founder and CEO of HIHR LLC. After years of building high-performance teams for Fortune 100 giants, Erica now equips small and mid-sized businesses with the same tactics that really kind of help grow the business, find that team, but without that corporate price tag. If you're ready to complete, to really kind of compete for that great people in the market, this is a conversation for you. It's going to hold a lot of value. And I myself have struggled to help my clients in this area in particular as well. So Erica, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Ryan. I'm thrilled to be here.
So I want to kind of dive into this a little bit differently today. I want to really highlight the problem here. The problem facing many in the audience is that they need good workers, and it often feels like only big companies can afford that top talent. So I want to jump right in with some really important questions to really kind of pick your brain and get that value out to the listeners. What steps can a small business take today before posting a job to understand the true role and skills needed?
I think this is such an important topic because in our experience the last 7 years working with small to mid-sized businesses, this part is a lot of times rushed and the initial planning is not done, which causes many more hours of frustration, not finding the right candidates, hiring the wrong candidates. You can imagine how the thousands of dollars add up quickly. So it is a huge problem. And just by planning, we call it a job analysis. So being initial analysis, not even, so yes, of course, what's the tasks, but what are the desired outcomes? Focusing on outcomes and then imagine asking the people that work with this person that's coming, what do you need from this person? How do you collaborate with them? Like just taking an hour and having these conversations and putting it all in one place before the job description is a huge time saver. So you know, really, what are you going to post? What are you looking for?
You know, I find it kind of interesting because I've always considered it, ask yourself enough questions of why, what, and how. You know, I've struggled with trying to find the right words to say to bring in the right people before. And I think that's a good framework that really helps. And how can a company showcase its culture, mission, or values in place of big salaries or flashy perks to attract the right candidates? Because we know money speaks loud, but we know that culture and mission and values really what creates a career over a job.
I have found time and time again, when people feel that they are known and cared for and they have a path forward, they're not gonna leave for more money. Now, if their salary's doubled, that could be a different story, but in general, they're going to be invested. So I love this as a focus. One of the best things I've learned, I'm part of a group called Entrepreneurs Organization, 16,000 strong around the world. If you don't know of them, they're incredible. And they actually taught us, when you work with marketing for your services and products, work on them for your actually what's going out to potential new employees, what's going out to attract candidates. Because you want to make sure your mission's out there strongly. What makes you different? Why do you treat employees better than the neighbor? It really matters. And from everything from your job post to how you interview, the questions you're asking, to your onboarding, to your performance reviews, it just needs to be going through the whole process to keep that consistent. And that really matters. And you can't just do it as a CEO, right? Your leaders and then the leaders and the supervisors, everyone has to lead this forward. And that's why that process from job post all the way through onboarding and then the performance reviews, et cetera, that verbiage has to be there and really show up. And it matters so much.
Yeah, I can definitely say with some of my clients, when I've altered their job postings, when we took the focus away from all the money and more on like the culture, the values, the mission of the company, we had a much better turnout, not just people overall, but the quality of the people. So what creative low-cost sourcing methods have you found that really worked best in your experience?
Well, the beautiful thing is, Ryan, going off of what you just said, when you do that consistently, you actually don't have to post that much. I see organizations and ours as well. Almost everyone we hired, it was because of who we are, it's because of our network sharing about us, that kind of thing. So if you keep doing this well, people will come to you, and that's what you want to aim for. However, that's not always the case, or you might be a startup. So there are some amazing free services that work. For instance, many don't know alumni networks. You can work with any local university and say, hey, we have this internship or we have this job. You post for free. You fill out 15 minutes of profile and post for free. That's amazing. That's a great opportunity. Also, Indeed is free. If you pay just a few hundred dollars, by the way, you can get the job ads and you get such a big return. We've had such good return on Indeed. Also, if you have a payroll partner, most of them partner with ZipRecruiter or other partners, and for a very nominal fee, you have access to hundreds of job boards. So those are just some hacks that you can save like hundreds and thousands of dollars and have access to the job market. The
Now
talent.
that is extremely valuable. I mean, anything you can do to save that money and to really maximize the efficiency and really the whole point is results, right? So in that same note, I really believe in attitude over aptitude. I believe someone with the right attitude can learn anything that's required. But during interviews, how can leaders, business owners ask the right questions? What are some of those questions to ask, and how can they create that standard of asking the right questions to reveal someone's internal passions and really identify their reason?
I love that you already called out attitude because that carries people so far, especially when you have a small company. It just matters. Everyone you bring in, they must have a can-do attitude. They can be a challenger, great. They can be see the other side, optimism, right? But they have to have a can-do attitude. So I think one, when you're interviewing, really watching body language. That is so important. Learn how to do that. Some people are better at this than others, but are people leaning in? Are they excited? Are they engaged? Are they making eye contact? That is going to be an indicator. That's a really good sign that they have a good attitude and they want to be part of what you're doing, that they really are excited. Another, I'm going to share three questions I always ask. I've done this for like 10 years and I keep doing it because it works so well. In the beginning, tell me about yourself. At the end, anything else you want to share, any questions you have at the end. If they don't give me much in that space, they seem to me very unprepared. How do you not have questions about this amazing job opportunity, our amazing company? How do you have nothing else to share about yourself? So the ones that really stand out are the ones that are prepared. They can say, on the website is all this, and like, what? Tell me more about your volunteer program, anything. It just shows that they really care and they didn't just throw in an application. They really want to be part of your team. It really makes a difference. So I think those are some quick hacks. There's so much more I could share for another episode, but those are quick hacks that will help decide who to pull through the process.
Those are definitely some really, really good questions. And like you said, it gives an opportunity for them to kind of talk about the inner workings and things, and it can really show if they came prepared, if they already have this stuff in mind. So it's funny because one of the big questions I love to ask in an interview, especially for somebody that's stepping into a leadership role, is what are your three biggest life goals? And sometimes they don't always have an answer. They might have one, they might have two, but just the fact that I've seen people take a moment to think and then give me an answer showed so much about their personality. It wasn't just off the top of the head, it wasn't surface level, it was very thoughtful. And they wanted to chew on it to make sure they were honest and real with what they had to say. And sometimes those types of questions really do show you the right people. So now that let's say we found the right people, what can we do on the onboarding steps to really keep them engaged and productive from day one?
So I'm probably stepping out of line here, but I hope it's okay. I would love to share just a watch out because of what you said. And I have seen this mistake time and time again. We think because there's not enough experience or because the experience is in the wrong industry, you miss out on someone that is incredible that had their three life goals and they really put thought into it and they had the attitude. And I would just encourage those leaders, really watch yourself there because you could really miss out on a rock star that is a smart individual that will come in and learn because they have the right attitude, they have life goals, they have purpose. You don't want to miss out on that person. Time and time again, I would pick that person over someone with 20 years of experience in engineering or whatever it is. Sorry, I had to say that, Ryan. So
I'm
to
so glad you added that. Thank you for adding.
Yes. It's just like I see it time and time again. And I thank goodness we get to work with these individuals and we can fix it going forward. But even in Fortune 100, we learned this and we used it because it works. It's so powerful and important. So for onboarding, so here you are. You spent so much energy and effort finally finding the person, right? And then so many organizations, and I've been there. Oh, what's the plan? What's the 90-day plan? We're not prepared to make sure they have this incredible experience because they need to. Day one, they should have a really amazing welcome, a tour, a lunch. This is a big deal. It's the first day. They're nervous. They're meeting their team for the first time. I just think roll out the red carpet for the new individual and make sure they have a great path. Giving them a 90-day plan. What is their training plan? Do they have the computer they need or whatever equipment they need? All that speaks volumes to them. They made a good decision. And then from there, many companies stop at 90 days. But a best practice is keep it 1 year. Have a quarter touch base with them, whether it's a phone call, a check-in, for at least 1 year. And I have seen turnover from first years drop to nothing when you just add quarterly follow-ups, check-ins, addressing a concern that comes up. It's really powerful.
I couldn't agree more. I find it also, it ties right into the people with the right attitude. It's a whole lot easier to keep someone with the right attitude engaged from day one, productive from day one, because they're going into this with a desire to execute, to do something, right? Something that I found that's really powerful is when you can show somebody's goals and how they can get there by working with you and the skills they can gain to get there from working in your business. You get a whole lot of different real engagement. So for our audience, if you're enjoying this conversation today like I am, refill your coffee, stretch out, maybe load up your popcorn, whatever it is you're doing, don't go anywhere because we're going to be right back on the bottom line with more Erica. Love what you're watching. Don't miss a moment of the bottom line or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmediatv. From business to breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. Welcome back to The Bottom Line. If you're just tuning in, I am here with Erica Butler, an HR powerhouse who believes small companies can reveal the big leagues by down, like really doubling down on the right people. And there's so much power in this conversation that we're having, and we're cracking the code on cost smart hiring. So now let's protect the investment by keeping, star performers from drifting to greener pastures. So Erica, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Ryan.
So now I want to highlight a different kind of problem here. The problem facing many in the audience is that good people like to leave sometimes, and it often feels like a mystery why they quit. So I want your help to kind of navigate this a little bit. And I'm going to go right head in first, as we usually would. What are the emotional and practical reasons top performers leave, even when they seem happy?
Yes, such an important question. So it's interesting because, of course, they seem happy because they have good attitudes and they are really good at what they do. So many times they get put into this quadrant of being ignored, not on purpose, but you don't, when you're a CEO, you don't worry about that high performer because you know they got it. You know they're okay. They're always okay. They always figure it out. So at some point, they get neglected. And this is not an uncommon thing that happens. So I'm so happy you brought it up. So there's two things. You talked about practical and emotional. Emotional, the high performers, they're invested. They care so much, it hurts. They actually get emotionally hurt because they love the organization and they don't feel like the organization is loving them back. And they might have a hard time saying that. They might not express it. They might never be asked how they're feeling. But that's a lot of times the underlying. They don't want to even leave, but they feel like no one even cares that I'm doing so much. I'm adding so much value. The other one is practical. They know their worth. They know because people tell them, "Hey, you're doing a good job. You're getting the sale. You're moving the needle." They know their worth. They know what they're worth outside the company too. They're smart people. So at the end of the day, if they don't have a career path and no one's paying attention to them, What are they doing? They know they're capable. So they're going to be getting people asking about them. Of course, they're going to get headhunted. The best people always do. So that's why we need a strategy to keep them.
You know, it's crazy. I've been in those shoes before where there was a lot that was demanded of me. Entire departments were relying on my capabilities, my execution, my leadership. But at the same time, those that were above me were not catching some of the signs. You know, maybe I should have spoke up a little sooner, but there were times where it was definitely really hard. And I had played the image in my head of what would it look like jumping ship and going somewhere else that might appreciate me more. But ultimately, my mentor, thank God I found him in that business at that time, because he saw the signs and he addressed them immediately. He made sure I was heard. He made sure I was ready to take on the world, and I had all the support I needed. And I think that's some of the big problems that I see in business, why some of those high performers leave. Even the high performers need support. They need resources. They need to be heard. They need to be recognized. And there's so much importance in that, and it's so easily overlooked. That's a big problem that I see. So how do leaders build in those maybe regular informal check-ins to let leaders be heard and to really address the problem before people leave?
The first thing is making sure you and your leadership team know, identify who are the high performers. Because if they're not doing that, you just have to identify it as a leadership team and make sure they are getting that recognition, path forward, attention. And then making sure you have a conversation with them. Hey, you know, I'm running the company, things go crazy sometimes. If put some onus on them. If you feel not challenged, if you feel not recognized, if you feel there's a gap, we value you so much, you bring so much, please come talk to me. Will you schedule a week, monthly coffee with me? I want to keep tabs on you. I want to make sure we're in touch. Open that door. And it's not just the leader always having to make sure, but open it up for them to come in and say, I'm having a hard time. I'm not challenged enough. I don't feel like I'm being developed. And doing that is going to be really powerful. But then just one more thing is regular monthly focus groups, walking the floor and having these intentional conversations, pulse surveys. This is just such a best practice because if you're not asking, you don't have the two-way communication, you miss out on so much of valuable feedback that you can course correct really quickly.
There was so much gold in what you just said, and I've got to unpack just a little bit of that because, my goodness, I feel like I need to be taking notes right now. See, it's funny because there once upon a time when I was running a pretty big company, you know, I was on the floor regularly. I made sure to see my teams, the production teams, the managers, supervisors. I made sure my presence was known, but those guys saw me go from the shop floor to the boardroom, right? Well, the CEO that started the company, his presence was much bigger than mine. These people would see him as almost a mythical creature at times. So I would motivate him to walk the shop floor even once a month if that's what he could pull off. But the motivation, the morale would change significantly. The people started feeling like they were seen, and that they would ask questions. He'd give them an opportunity to talk, and it did change a lot. So there's definitely a lot there of value. So really, what kind of questions can managers ask in those stay interviews to uncover some of those deeper motivations?
So one of the hacks I've learned is how important confidentiality is to people and that they can trust that. So I think make it known, hey, I'm talking to you because I want to see really how you're doing, what's going well, what's not going well. We're going to be aggressive about it because we care. And then just so you know, like it might be the CEO or it might be the supervisor, whoever it is. What you share is confidential, unless it's a safety issue, unless it's something that, because I'm going to do this with everyone or half the team, and it's going to be communicated and fixed, but share what you really feel. There's no, because people get scared sometimes. They think, if I share this with the boss or boss's boss, there's going to be consequences. I can't share that I'm upset about this. They think this happens regularly. So I think that confidentiality, sharing that you will keep it confidential and their name's not shared, the feedback shared. And also that you do what you actually keep it confidential. It's amazing what you'll learn and the relationships you'll build. It's so powerful. Again, I really believe in doing that.
I have definitely heard horror stories of those opportunities to speak candidly and to share perspective and feedback under the mask of that confidentiality, the anonymous, right? And then it turns sideways and they start dropping names, they start bringing people up, and it creates turmoil, chaos. And then it's pretty hard to keep people, you know, wanting to stay in that work environment if they know their voice, their complaints, their concerns are going to spread like wildfire to everybody. Right. So that is so true. That a chance to be anonymous and have confidentiality is so important, especially when addressing those types of problems. But how do you create clear career paths and development conversations so that employees know they have a future?
I actually was talking to a CFO of a Fortune 500 company this week about this, and it was so fascinating because he said frequency, frequency. I want He's a high performer. I want to hear about it often. I want to know my path. I want to know where I stand. Being open and transparent. I think those things are so important. Many organizations, for some reason, they'll have their little box of where everyone falls, but they don't let people know where they fall. Or people are shocked at their performance review where they stand. So I think if you're not doing regular one-on-ones, including development conversations and letting people honestly know what's going well and what's not, and then supporting them through training and development, there's a huge miss there. It doesn't take much time, but it just keeps people engaged and feeling excited about where they're headed and what's possible.
There's so much value in just having visibility, right? You know, something I actually mentioned before, just a little bit, it really ties into this. And, you know, once you can understand and identify as a leader, this was like my secret tool in the belt. It was once I could identify the goals, objectives, and even the purpose of my team, my employees, the people I supported, it gave me the power to show them how what they're doing in this business, on this team, how it's going to take them closer to their goals, their objectives. Even if it means leaving the company, no problem. I've helped plenty of people leave my charge. That is no problem. But they always end up training their replacement so they can leave on good terms and fully prepared for what's next. So it's a win-win, but there's so much power in just letting people see the possibility and that there's so much opportunity out there. If you don't know there's opportunity, why try harder? Why go above the bare minimum standards? There's no reason to if you don't see an opportunity for growth. So it
Absolutely.
boils down to also incentive, right? But
And sometimes, can I add to that? Sometimes you
yes.
don't have a path forward for a high performer. And I love that you did that, Ryan. That was so kind and such a supportive leader to get them support to go to the right opportunity for them if you couldn't provide it. Because there's others that will want that. You don't want frustrated high performers on your team. You don't want people in these roles that don't want to be there. It's not a fit anymore. And I think that's genius that you actually have done that and you do that. That's wonderful. And the more we can do that, the better. Don't hold on to this out of fear we won't find somebody else. No, you have to go open-handedly and do the right thing for the person.
Most definitely. And when I employed that methodology, that mindset, we had much greater success in consistency, efficiency, removing bottlenecks, everything. It helped all in all. But you know, once turnover has started, you know, what steps can a business owner, leaders take to really rebuild that trust and show that leadership cares?
Sure. I think immediately find out why as quickly as possible. What would get the data? So if you need to do a quick pulse survey, start doing focus groups, doing more stay interviews, exit interviews, what's the trend? Like find out why so you can address it. And so many times it is that trust broken, Ryan. And I've had to tell leaders, you really owe the team an apology. You haven't been listening. You haven't been, you've hurt them and you didn't mean to. You didn't mean to. You didn't know you were doing it, but just sitting down and sometimes it takes that. So that's what it takes sometimes. So I really recommend apology, getting the data, and then acting on it immediately.
I think that's very clear and concise, and that is extremely powerful. It's just take action. Don't wait. Don't let it fester. Take action. So for our audience, once again, if you're loving this conversation like I am, grab your pen and pad if you haven't already. Stick around. We've got so much more with Erica Butler and all the beautiful knowledge she has. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on the bottom line. Love what you're watching. Don't miss a moment of The Bottom Line or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to a full lineup of bilingual programming in English or Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. Welcome back on the bottom line. We're still here with Erica Butler, and really this topic that we're on about finding the right people, hiring the right talent is so powerful. I wish we could do this for another hour and a half. I promise you that. But you know, The thing is, hiring, check, retention, check, but the true differentiator, right? A culture that people brag about. In this segment, Erica shows us how everyday behaviors, not fancy slogans, turn culture into profit-driving assets. You know, there's a lot of importance to this topic because this is where I see a lot of businesses struggle, is creating that proper culture that creates the right things for a team to truly thrive. So let's reframe the problem here. Let's look at this from a different angle. The problem that a lot of businesses face in their work, it feels dull, and it often feels like culture is just a buzzword. So Erica, thank you for being here, and I really want your help figuring this one out.
I'm so happy to be here, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
So, what everyday interactions best show a company's values beyond mission statements and, the wall?
Sure. So I think it's making sure CEO through leaders, through supervisors are aligned on values and that it's taken through everything from the job post to interviews to onboarding to job performance discussions. And it's lived recognition programs around the values. It really has to be an everyday conversation, and everyone should live and breathe it the best that they possibly can. It's foundational.
Okay, so kind of leads me to another question though, because truth is, there's so much a business can do to really outline their values and their mission and things like that. But creating culture, I have a belief, super simple belief, but it is pretty straightforward. Either the business owner, the leaders create the culture, or the employees, the team creates the culture for you. The culture is going to be formed one way or another. So you've got to decide, are you going to control that culture and turn it into what you believe is going to be effective for the business? Or are you going to let it just turn out to whatever it may be? I've seen it go both ways, and there's definitely a better option, but how can leaders define and reinforce cultural values through clear behavior examples? Lead by example. How can leaders do that?
It may sound simple, but the best way is role model leadership and accountability. There's so many studies, Harvard, I mean, there's just so many studies backing this up. And if the leader says we value innovation, but then they're punishing people for taking risks, and that doesn't match with the value. You know, of course, it depends on the situation, but I think role model leadership, as simple as it might sound, and being accountable to it is important. If you don't do that, it will not go through the rest of the organization.
That's a really, really good point. It's funny, the concept of lead by example, I find to be so profound. It's easy to do, but it's so easy not to do. And that is a big problem. When people get into leadership roles, they feel a sense of entitlement or importance sometimes, depending on how the culture is, that we forget that as a leader, our job is to create the path. Not to follow the team and to point the direction, but to actually create that path for them. So something I did a long time ago when I was stepping into a role as a supervisor, when I was much younger, I had a hat made that said lead by example. A lot of people made fun of me for it, but I wore it for almost 2 years as I became supervisor, coordinator, planner, and it just helped reinforce my belief of it's my job to go first. And I feel there's a lot of businesses that struggle to do that today. So which daily or weekly practices like check-ins or shout-outs build connection and spirit?
Well, first off, I love that you had a hat made. That is amazing. And honestly, even though some of these things seem so magoo or they can be made fun of, if you do it again and again and there's good energy around it and becomes a thing, that's momentum. That's powerful. And if you read about the best organizations out there, they're doing it and they rally people around this. So that's really cool. But to answer your question, so the daily, weekly practices, simple things as much as a morning huddle for 5 to 10 minutes. How is everyone check in? These are the priorities of the day. One word. This is the best practice I learned that I put in place from Entrepreneurs Organization, and they do one word. How are you? And even if they're not, if someone says feeling tired today, that could be a check in later. You don't have to camp on that, but just see where your team is so you can follow up. Even starting with some recognition is really powerful. So I think the touch base is the communication, some positivity in there, recognition. That is paramount. If you're doing that, the team's already going to have a better start to their day.
That's a really good point. And it's another one of those things where it's really simple, but it's not always easy, right? It's easy said, but not always easy done. So it's one of those things where it's those consistent small disciplines we apply daily that make all the difference in forming that culture. But a big question for you, and this is might be a lot to unpack, but when a culture is negative or weak, what are some of the first steps to help rebuild that trust and positivity?
So, I've learned to avoid negativity like the plague. And what I mean is not constructive criticism. I want that. I want the challenge. But when you're next to someone who you just said, like, everything's wrong, everything's a complaint, that's not a fit for the team. So my answer for that is actually accountability. Looking at yourself as a leader, looking at the leaders around you, are we having this issue of this negativity? It's going to pull everyone down, and it does. It leads to unproductivity. And if you're not holding that one, two, how many people accountable to not dragging everyone down, not bringing a can-do attitude, everyone around it feels it. So you're not being kind to the rest of your team. You're not supporting the rest of your team. It's your job as the leader to, if it's a first warning, if it had the difficult conversation, you need to address it and you need to remove the problem. Hopefully that person gets on board. That's the goal. But if not, they're not a fit for the amazing mission that you have and what you're building. I feel so strongly about this. It's true time and time again.
It's funny. I feel a lot of people know when the culture of their business is struggling. They can feel it. They can sense it. They just know it. But sometimes it's easier just to avoid the problem and act like it doesn't exist. But in reality, it always starts with one small step, like that hard conversation. And a lot of people, it's outside of their comfort zone to have that conversation. But here's the truth. If you do nothing, you can't expect anything to change. You can't expect to improve the culture, change productivity, any of it, if you don't put the first action in. So that leads me to something else that's really important because we understand culture can do a lot, but I want to hear what are some of the concrete business results, like better productivity or lower turnover rate, that you've seen when culture is strong?
Thank you for the opportunity to answer this. One of my biggest challenges the last 7 years or so running this business, HR consulting, is we get misjudged as a soft skill. But that's why there's a master's program. That's why it's not. And there are real hard business results that happen when you put these things in place. And there's things that work and things that don't. So what I have seen, I have so many examples, but one of the best stories I can share, I was part of a team and we for 6 months to a year, but by that year we dropped turnover in half from 14% to 7%. We increased internal promotions from 25% to 50%. So more people were engaged, getting promoted, staying. We had a 100% acceptance rate. And this was like bringing on 20 new people. 100% acceptance rate. The people we chose us. And our survey results, we did surveys every year, it went at double digits in all the main areas that were an issue. So that's just one example. And 12 rolling months, we track this monthly to see the actual results that impacted the business. And of course, then revenue is better. It just impacts everything when it's done well.
Some of our listeners may not truly grasp the gravity of those numbers, but as a consultant, I can tell you I'm blown away. That is absolutely incredible. My goodness, 100% acceptance, like that's, I've never seen that. And I have worked with a lot of businesses. So you've got something figured out that you need to share with people because that's absolutely incredible. So I want to hit you with a little bit of a curveball. Based on those numbers, something that's more important to me than your what is your reason why. So why do you do this? What part of this gives you that fulfillment at the end of the day?
Sure, I think I've been doing this coming up on 20 years, and I think it hurts me when I see people struggling at work and they're not treated well for a lot of reasons, and it doesn't have to be that way. I think there's a lot of fear and hurt in the workplace. It doesn't have to be there. So when you put these team first, we call them team first practices in place, everybody wins. The business wins, the team wins. It's just so beautiful how it can be. And so many places fall short of that for reasons of a lot of times fear or not being trained or a lot of reasons. So I love seeing the results and seeing people be on the other side, loving their jobs. It spills over to their families. It's just really a cool job that I have that I love.
And that right there is what I find to be the most important thing. Your reason why for doing this is all built on serving others in the way you know how. And what might seem like a small problem to somebody, to you, is still very important because you can see outside looking in what kind of thing it can turn into. You mentioned it can, people when they go to work, if they're stressed out, the environment's terrible, the culture is bad, they carry that stress home with them, and it impacts the way they interact with their spouse, their children, their family members, all shapes and sizes. So there's a lot more to your reason why than I think a lot of people would understand, because it is truly a selfless endeavor to try to make an opportunity for people to enjoy what they do and to wake up with purpose and vigor for what their day looks like. So kudos to you for having such a big heart in doing this, because I've seen a lot of people in your shoes do it for the wrong reasons and it never pans out okay. So to our viewers and listeners, this is only getting better and better in my opinion. And we still have one more segment with Erica, and I'm dying to get into it. So don't go anywhere. Keep, stay tuned in, because we're going to be right back with more of The Bottom Line. Love what you're watching. Don't miss a moment of The Bottom Line or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmediatv. From business to breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. We're back on The Bottom Line with our final round with Erica. And I am tackling the leadership skill most people dread, and that is hard conversations. We touched base in this in our last segment. Whether it's performance feedback or sensitive conflict, the way we speak the truth can make or break morale in a business. So, Erica, let's arm our viewers with the tools to talk the tough talk and to stay human at the same time. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you again for having me.
So this topic is pretty special to me, because earlier in my career is I took the role of an executive in a business. This was my hard learning curve, was handling those tough conversations. I realized very quickly that it's not one size fits all. You've got to learn how to find what works best for everybody. And it was a big challenge for me. Took a lot of learning and struggle. So I'm excited to get your perspective on this today, and I want to dive right back into this. So how do you prepare mentally and emotionally before a difficult conversation so you don't just wing it?
I just want to share, this is so normal and such human nature. I led some large teams earlier on in my career, and I remember my first term, my knees were knocking, and I was so nervous. I'm like, what about their family? What are they going to do? And it just was really hard. So you said, Ryan, about learning. We have to, as leaders, give ourselves some grace that it's not easy having these really hard conversations sometimes, and it is something to learn, to work with an your HR partner, another leader, get training, role play. We've role played with many leaders over the years, and let me tell you, leaders who have led for 30 years have told me, I'm sick to my stomach, I can't sleep at night because of this final warning, because of this termination. So just know it's very human, but also as leaders, it's one of the most important parts of our job.
That's very, very true. It's like I mentioned before, a lot of people avoid this part of being a leader, and it's the inevitable. I like to think of it like this, and maybe I'm kind of weird for thinking of it this way. I truly find leadership to be a lot like parenting. To be a genuine leader, I feel you've got to love the people you lead as if they're your kids. Same thing with parenting. Sometimes you've got to tell them not to do something because it's not safe or in their best interest. Sometimes you have to address an action or discipline, something they have that they're doing so that you can better them. It's the same thing with being a leader in a business. You're doing it out of love and care, not out of anger and spite and resentment, right? So I find there to be a direct correlation in parenting and leadership. But what words and what tone can you use to really make it genuine care rather than, criticism?
Yeah, well, just going off of what you say about the parenting thing, I think this also role model leadership. When you say, to your kids, hey, I'm sorry that I lost my temper. I'm sorry. You're setting an example. You're role modeling. And we can do that for our team too. So if they're in a tough feedback conversation, it's not the first, we asked them for feedback before. We said, hey, we're not perfect. We want to get better as leaders. So if you can create that, it makes even your conversation, your tough conversation easier, because you're also someone that's accountable and taking feedback, right? So I want to point that out. But talking about tone and just how you handle it. So I think leaning forward, making eye contact, your body language, showing that you care, asking, don't jump in and assume that they don't have a major family issue going on. There might be a reason their performance dropped. So I think asking questions first is so important. Is everything okay right now? Or how are you feeling about things right now? And truly meaning it. Let them share first where they're at. Then you have information to go off of so you can respond accordingly and correctly. I think that is the number one thing that we can miss, that we just need to ask first and check in with them. Then we can bring the gap of performance and talk about that next.
Okay. I should be taking notes. I'm going to have to watch this again later, because you're absolutely right. I think this is actually going to be useful content for my clients as a good resource, a good reminder, because you're so right. You're hitting the nail on the head with every answer you have here. So it's funny, because I know when it comes to proper listening, active listening, I like to use things like paraphrasing and those calm pauses. But what are some of the listening skills that you can bring up that keep the conversation balanced and respectful?
So there is a little code that I use, and there's many of them out there. So I use what's called DISC. There's insights, there's so many, and it teaches you how to read people, and it teaches you what they need. So you're right, I do paraphrase, I do show listening skills and make sure they know they're being heard. But also for DISC, if they're an I, see like where they fall, I am aware of that and I can know that. And then I can respond in a way that they're gonna hear better. So I could spend also a whole episode on this, but if you don't know about the different personality assessments and things out there, there's a lot of validity to them, and they give you extra tools as a leader of how to listen better and how to respond better to meet that person where they're at. So they also hear you better. It's again, very powerful.
You know, it's funny, those personality assessments, things like that. I dove into that very, very deep for a long time. My mentor told me something very important early on in my career as a leader, and it was, every conversation I have has to be objective based. It has to be, here's the result that is best for them, best for us, best for everyone. Enlightened self-interest, everyone wins, no one loses. So knowing that that is the objective, however you have to deliver it to have that conversation to get there is what has to be done. And it, like I said before, it's not one size fits all. Everyone's a little bit different. For me, fun fact, for some reason, If you yell at me and get me mad at me, I move mountains. I respond well to being yelled at by my mentor. I don't understand it. It's weird, sure. But I would move mountains because it would make me hold myself accountable. Yet there's others that sometimes you got to beat around the bush. You got to have a softer delivery. But ultimately, the objective is what really matters for them to be successful, so all of us can be successful. But you know, after the discussion, what follow-up actions turn those concerns into real change and accountability?
Sure. So let's say there really is a performance gap and everything's fine with the family. It's not related, you know, performance gap. So there needs to be an understanding that there really is a problem. And we don't, you know, sugarcoat this, and we say, hey, this is the gap and it needs to be fixed. And if it's not fixed, there needs to be regular follow-up. So that could be a performance improvement plan that's spelled out very clearly for the team member. It could be a first warning, failure to follow instructions. And the reason we need to go to that, people think it's a hand slap, or they're like, it's not a nice thing to do, but it is a kind thing to do, because you're being honest, you're holding them accountable, and people don't make changes unless they see there is a real consequence. I've seen people be late and told 1,000 times, but there was no consequence, so they kept being late. But if that matters to the business, if they're held one first warning, it changes. The whole culture changes. It's powerful. So you need to have some teeth, not in a jerk way, but this is important, and we need to address it in a professional, serious way. It needs to be corrected.
Yeah. Very, very true. It ties right back to my parenting philosophy. You never tell your kid you're going to do something and then don't do it, especially if it comes to reprimandation or disciplinary actions. When you say you're going to do something, or hey, if you do XYZ, I'm going to do XYZ, You better follow through because it hurts your credibility, your integrity, and it makes it really, really hard to hold accountability across the board to anybody. And one big thing I like to try to steer people away from, public displays of accountability can be powerful yet dangerous at the same time. It is an appropriate time and place, an appropriate setting for that. So you've got to be really strategic about that. I know sometimes a lot of business owners like to make these big public displays of power, authority, but sometimes that can destroy the business internally. So, if the conversation becomes tense or emotional, what strategies can help both parties return to that calm and constructive dialogue?
Yeah, I would say your example you shared absolutely ruins trust and yes, is not advisable. So I love that you shared that because it does happen. But going on the emotional, how to handle emotional conversations and ones that escalate. I was so fortunate. I got younger in my career, like training from the Fortune 100 company about from like the top security official of this crazy global company. So I just feel really happy and equipped to answer this. But for emotional challenges, give them the tissues, show them you care, give them a minute. But when it escalates into anger and even possibly violence, the conversation needs to be shut down immediately. You should never have a difficult conversation by yourself. Always take another leader as a partner or your HR partner, always, because you don't want your word against that person's, and it's just safer for everyone. And it's totally okay to say, hey, we cannot be yelling here, so you need to leave and have a drink of water. When you calm down, come back. Or send them home for the day, even because it's not becoming a productive conversation. And then there should be accountability to address that because that is not appropriate in the workplace. So I do take that pretty seriously. And have had it happen many times.
Yeah, it should definitely be taken seriously. That is for sure. So, Erica, this is gold for leaders ready to master, the courageous conversations. Where should they reach out? Website, LinkedIn, or any other platforms?
Sure. So we have a saying called Go Higher. You can find us at our website, GoHIHR.com. We have a comment box. We give back very quickly. Also, we're on LinkedIn. You can type in HIHR. Hire International Human Resources, and you can also find us there. And love to be in touch with you. If you have questions, love to help.
Erica, thank you so much for being on the show today and for giving us this packed wisdom and actionable insight, episode. It's so powerful, and I'm definitely going to be looking back at this and sharing this with some of my clients as well. From cost savvy hiring to cultures that sing and conversations that heal, you've shown that people, the strategy isn't a luxury. It's the bottom line. It really is. And to our viewers, remember, small teams can make the biggest impact if they're led with clarity, empathy, and courage. So I'll leave you with this. Success isn't given, it's earned, and it could be one leadership move at a time. Thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.